We're going to continue our study of Sefer Shmuel Beis, and we're in the middle of Perek Yud Gimel, and we're up to Pasuk Chaf Aleph. And what had happened in the first 20 Pesukim, if you weren't here, it was a pretty terrible story, a story of one of David's children named Amnon, unfortunately raped his half-sister, who either halachically was related, halachically wasn't related. Her name was Tamar, and she obviously was violated, and she felt violated, and she felt even more violated with the fact that he was going to basically tell he was telling her to leave, and you know, kind of make it be known that this is what happened to her, and her full brother, again, maybe it wasn't halachic, but her full brother was Avshalom, another one of David's sons, and Avshalom approached her and told her that you should be quiet right now about what Amnon did to you, and don't concern yourself over this matter. He was not trying to silence her. He was basically trying to tell her, I got this, and it'll be done my way. And the last phrase that we read was that Tamar lived in the house of Avshalom, her brother, and so he kind of took over taking care of her. Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Yeah.
The reason.
Yeah, go.
The reason why the show related or not related is because a lot of the sibling is not related.
No, because she might have been a convert. And therefore, she came from being a convert, she's not related. So Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Vahamelech David Shama Eskol Hadarm Ha'ela Vayichar Lo Ma'od. And David HaMelech, the king, he heard about all of these things. Vayichar lo ma'od, and he became very angry. So we have to imagine that everything that Tamar thought came true, in the sense that when she was forced to leave in the way that she looked as she was leaving the room of Amnon, it became apparent what had happened, and that the details were, at least around the palace, were spilling around, and that David became aware of it. The pasuk tells Vayichar lo ma'od, he was extremely angry. One would expect that the next pasuk would have something to do with David's anger. David would address the issue in some way, shape, or form, and that doesn't happen. The next pasuk goes back to Avshalom. And the pasuk after that is going to fast forward 2 years. And so in the text itself, we don't find David reacting. Besides it saying that he gets angry, we don't find that he actually rebukes Amnon, tries to punish Amnon, does anything more than just have this reaction of anger. I would say at the same time, we don't find him comforting Tamar, who's his daughter. You know, that now the fact that those things are not in the text doesn't mean that none of, it could be that they all took place. In terms of a punishment, so you would say, on the one hand, if you're going to follow the normal approach of Jewish court, so there can't be a punishment without witnesses and without a warning and without some type of official documentation, again, it doesn't have to be documented, but specifically witnesses that the crime took place, which is lacking here. There is another form of judgment, which we're going to hint to in the next parak, and we've done it before, that the king can judge things without necessarily all the detailed laws of Choshen Mishpat, of how a Beis Din, a Jewish court, has to follow. And so maybe David could have taken things into his own to punish Amnon. Another theory is that if David would punish Amnon, it would make this whole event more public. It would make the event more public, and that wouldn't be good, you know, for reasons probably similar that still are today, that people don't necessarily want to air something that's wrong, even if that might be the better thing to do. And I guess in the back of our minds, David has to realize Vayichar lo ma'od, he gets so upset, he must realize that this has something to do with all of the punishments that were announced that are going to be taking place to him because of what happened in the episode with him and Bathsheba, that he had been told, and specifically here you have something totally sexually immoral happening in his own home, and that was part of what happened in, you know, however we understand the episode with Bathsheba, it's something that's not proper in that area. And so perhaps David is, we're not seeing him react because he's realizing that it's really the one that he should be focused on in terms of himself is him. Again, it could be that he did approach Amnon, but for whatever reason, we don't have to know. It could be he does approach Tamar, but it's not recorded here.
It's funny though, but like, it doesn't seem odd that nothing was done. Because, like, especially like after this whole Me Too thing, like, nothing's been done forever. You know, like, it doesn't shock me. Oh, yeah, so he got angry, you know.
But it doesn't shock you that things didn't happen 30
years ago. Ben Affleck got angry when Gwyneth Paltrow told him what Harvey Weinstein was doing. You know, did he do any, you know what I mean? So.
And this is thousands. And this is thousands of years ago.
With different, yeah. More.
I mean, it's hard to know when we're being told the story from David HaMelech, so you would think that.
No, I'm saying
they were on a higher plane than.
But back then, the wars were even different.
Yeah, but again, it's you know, these holy people supposedly, so it's hard to imagine.
Right. So it could be he does he privately rebukes Amnon, and it's not, you know, it's not told to us. He privately comforts Tamar, and it's not told to us. The focus is not so much on David. The focus is on Avshalom. And Avshalom's reaction. In Pasuk Chav Beis, V'lo diber Avshalom im Amnon l'meira v'ad tof. In the aftermath of this story, Avshalom does not talk. He would not speak with Amnon l'meira v'ad tof, neither bad nor good. He wouldn't talk to him. It sounds like he wouldn't talk to him at all. Ki saneh Avshalom es Amnon. Because Avshalom hated Amnon, al devar asher ina es Tamar choso, on the matter that he violated his sister, ina to pain. The Arts Girl translated as violate. Ina means pain or afflict. Inui, does anyone else translate it differently?
Forced.
As Tamar choso, Tamar his sister, and that while we had explained that Tamar was a member of the household of David, and there's so many children from so many wives, Avshalom is going to naturally feel it the most because he's a full sibling. And again, a half sibling is still considered to be a sibling, but we can all imagine that when you have some type of, you know, family dynamic of multiple wives and multiple children, that you naturally fit with your full siblings and align yourself with your full siblings over your half-siblings. One would have to imagine that every half-brother of Tamar was up in arms, that such a thing took place in the palace to one of their own. But it's Avshalom who feels it the most, and Avshalom, he's harboring this hatred. Some of Farshim think it as commendable that he refused to speak to Amnon. He wouldn't even speak poorly of Amnon. He didn't fake it with Amnon. He wanted to have nothing to do with Amnon, and he wrote it off. He wrote Amnon off for now. He wouldn't speak to him. He wouldn't speak to him at all. He wouldn't even, you know, it wouldn't be the good morning, the hello, the how are you, nothing. Total silence. Now, whether or not that total silence is part of Absalom's long-term plan, I would almost argue that it's not, because what Avshalom is going to be trying to do, we're going to see in this, you know, unfortunately this horrific story only becomes more horrific, is that he at one point, and it's going to be 2 years later, he would like Amnon to trust him and be in his presence. So if that was your goal, if your goal was to have your, you know, this, the bad guy in the story from Avshalom's perspective is Amnon, and he wants the bad guy to trust him, so the silent treatment for 2 years is not necessarily the best way to go ahead and bring that. It would be more like, you know, maybe have the silent treatment go for like a month, and then slowly, you know, kind of let, you know, pretend that you're letting your guard down. This way, the bad guy will trust you, so you can go ahead and get him. And so one might be able to say that these two years of the silent treatment, this was much more not about Avshalom's plan, but he just couldn't look Amnon in the eye. He physically could not bring himself. You know, he probably thought that if I talk to him, I'm going to kill him. He has such hatred, such anger, and so. You might even say that it's counterintuitive. The silent treatment for so long is counterintuitive to trying to get Amnon to trust you and be in your presence. But that's what he did, and that's what the Tanakh records. And we don't hear about everything that happens during the time of David being king. And the Pasuk of Gimel, which we're up to, it fast forwards 2 years. Vayehi lishnasayim yamim. It was at the end of a two-year period. So 2 years later, after the episode with Amnon and Tamar happened, vayu gozzim l'Avshalom beval chatzor asher im Ephraim. They were shearing the sheep. Shearing, gozzim, gozes is to shear wool off sheep that Avshalom owned. So Avshalom had sheep, his private stock of sheep. And they were shearing the sheep in a place called Baal Chatzor, which is in the land of Ephraim. Vayikra Avshalom l'chol b'nei ha-melech. And Avshalom called all of the king's sons, all of his brothers and half-brothers, all of the princes would come. They'd be coming for a party. We saw already in Perachaf Hey of Shmuel Aleph, the story of Naval, which brought us Avigail. That story... Naval, it all started with Naval having this huge party or a celebration, the fact that you're shearing the sheep. It's the end of the season, and if you are successful, then you're shearing a lot of wool off a lot of sheep, and it means you'll have a lot of money to, you know, survive and thrive. So you make a party to celebrate, and it was in that party that David had approached Naval and said, you know, can you share? And Naval said no, and that started the whole episode there. So it's natural to have a celebration. So 2 years later, Avshalom chooses an event to create a celebration. And the context of the celebration is that he's shearing his sheep. And he sends invitations out, l'chol b'nei ha-melech. He sends invitations to the party to all of the princes, which, at first blush, makes a lot of sense. He's a member of the household. He's one of the princes. Who else does a prince invite to his parties but the fellow princes? Pasuk of Dalad, Vayavu Avshalom el Hamelech. Avshalom came to the king. Vayomer, and he said to his father, to David, Hineina gozezim la'avdecha. Behold, now they are shearing the sheep la'avdecha of your servant, meaning me. Yelechna Hamelech va'avadav im avadecha. Let the king and his servants come im avadecha with your servant, meaning with me. This is his respectful, more than respectful way, or extremely respectful way of inviting his father, inviting David to come to be part of this celebration, which the Mefarshim understand as being not necessarily so normal. That it's unbecoming of a king to go to a celebration, even of his own son. And David kind of responds respectfully, saying in Pasuk Chaf Hey, Vayomer HaMelech al Avshalom, the Melech David says to Avshalom, Al Bini, no, my son, Al Na Nelech Kulanu, we're not going to all go with you. Velo Nechbar Alecha, we don't want to be heavy for you. We don't want to be a burden for you. That, you know, it's to have the king's whole entourage come to the party, that's going to, you know, it's going to increase the party's needs, you know, maybe double. So we don't want to do, I don't want to be a burden on you. Vayifrotz bo, and he was, Avshalom, was trying to get David to, you know, agree to come. Velo aval aleches, but he didn't want to go, vayivarchehu, and he gave him a blessing, that David gave Avshalom a blessing. Now some of Farshim understand that Avshalom knew that David wasn't going to come. So why did he invite him? He invited him to come because he wanted David to be feeling like David's letting Avshalom down. Because if he's letting Avshalom down, he's going to ask for his next request. And his next request is going to be that Amnon should come in the place of David. And so if he already has David on the hook a little bit in terms of the conversation of David's feeling all bad that he said he can't come, so there's more of a chance that David will be encouraging for Amnon to go to the party as well. And that's exactly what happens. Pasuk Avav. Vayomer Avshalom. Avshalom says, V'lo yelech na yitanu Amnon achi. So, V'lo, if you're not going to come, yelech na, right, please, should come, yitanu with us, Amnon achi, Amnon my brother. Vayomer la melech, lama yelech imach. And the king says, why should he go with you? I mean, why do you need him? It's almost right. The whole thing is a little bit strange because first of all, we already saw the pasuk a couple of psukim ago that said Vayikra Avshalom l'chol b'nei hamelach. He invited everyone. So, I guess there are two ways we could understand everyone. He could invite everyone that he's on talking terms with, and he didn't invite Amnon, or he already invited Amnon. So why is he asking the king to have Amnon's presence? So Avshalom, you know, we could say what we want. He's definitely bright, and he's very thought out. And so he realizes that perhaps if he only invites Amnon, Amnon's not going to want to come. If he asks his father, so his father's probably going to be a little bit reluctant because his father has to know, right? His father, if we saw immediately after what happened with Tamar, David is aware. So you have to imagine by now, David is aware of the fact that Amnon and Avshalom are not, or Avshalom and Amnon are not on speaking terms. And so David's going to, naturally, you'd be a little wary. Why does he want him all of a sudden at his party? But he keeps pushing. Pasach Chav Zayin. Vayifrats bo Avshalom. Avshalom keeps on. He keeps on trying to, right, with the Mitzvah Sion says that it means to use many words to try to be persuasive, to try to change someone's thought process. So Vayivzer bo Avshalom. Avshalom is being persistent, trying to convince David. Vayishlach ito as Amnon. So finally, he's sent Amnon v'yaskol b'nei hamelech and all of the king's sons along with him. So now Amnon's invited, now Amnon is going to the party, and it could be that even though they haven't spoken for 2 years, the fact that it's been 2 years, Amnon is now thinking, and the fact that he sees that his brother wants him at a party, right? The context of going to a party is something peaceful, so Amnon goes along, and now he has also the kind of perhaps the okay from dad that David HaMelech is saying it was sending him. And so Amnon is suspecting of nothing, and after 2 years, he may be thinking that Avshalom is ready to forgive me, and that's why he's invited me to join in the celebration. And again, I'm going to be with all the other princes. I'm not going alone. It's the perfect, from Avshalom's standpoint, it's kind of the perfect plan, because no one's suspecting anything.
What is the size of these other princes? Any idea? How many people are at this party? How many actual princes are there?
There's, I mean, we had in Perek Gimel, we saw that there was one from each wife who was named.
And how many wives are there?
There were six in the beginning of Perek Gimel. We have to imagine that there are more, just naturally, yeah, we have to imagine there are more. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we already had the pasuk that Shlomo was born. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if Shlomo's getting the invite. We know that Shlomo's not exactly, Shlomo's 12 years old when he takes over as king. I don't exactly have the timeline of when this is taking place, but we're going to see, it's definitely a number of years before Shlomo, so presumably someone like Shlomo is not invited. But there has, you know, what the exact number is, can't say. But it seems to be large enough that there are many, you know, many people. And they have servants too, yeah, so it's a whole. Right. Everyone comes with each prince is going to come with their entourage. Pasuk Chavches, Vayitzav Avshalom es Ne'arav Lemor. Avshalom gave the following command. He commanded, he instructed his servants, saying as follows: Re'u na, see now, Kitov Lev Amnon Bayayin. When Amnon's heart is good with wine, which is one of the ways that Tanakh refers to being quite drunk, right? Kitov lev hamelach b'yayin. We have in the Megillah story that when Ahasuerus was very drunk, that's kind of the episode with Vashti and his decision to get rid of Vashti all happened. Kitov lev hamelach b'yayin. So Kitov tells, so Amnon Avshalom tells his servants that when Amnon's heart is full of wine, v'yamarti aleichem, then I will tell you, meaning I'll give you some signal. Haku es Amnon, you should strike Amnon, v'amitem oto, and you should kill him. Al tiro, do not be afraid. Halo ki anochi tzivise eschem, for I am commanding you. Chizku v'hu levnei chayil, you should be strong, you should be brave. The servants, they seem perhaps to be reluctant in this command, because you see Avshalom enforcing it, saying, Al tiro, don't be afraid. And perhaps when they first heard him say this, their reaction was fear. And he says, I am commanding you. Now the fact, when you receive a commandment to do something that goes against the laws of the Torah, you're not allowed to listen. The excuse of I was commanded to do is not an acceptable excuse. So these servants are going to be held, you know, in terms of heaven, these servants are going to be held accountable for their actions. The fact that Avshalom is commanding them to kill is not enough of a defense. Why would they listen to Avshalom? So either they're too fearful to say no, to not listen to Avshalom, or maybe they were under the mistaken impression that as long as they're getting a command, they could just say, well, we were commanded to do this, and they hide behind the command. The Torah does not, you know, the Torah does not give a capital punishment for the crime of rape, and I'm not an expert in the American legal system. I don't think it's the punishment in the American legal system to be put to death. First of all, there are many states in the United States that doesn't put someone to death for any crime. So this is not the prescribed punishment from the Torah, to kill someone for doing this horrific crime. And we had pointed out that presumably there were no witnesses. And so for humans to carry out punishment is inappropriate. Anytime our tradition, right, we believe one of the tenets of faith is that God rewards and God punishes. So that when there's a situation of something happening without witnesses, without a warning, without Bezdin being able to give a punishment. Nowadays, right, it's 5778. We have nice Jewish courts. They handle certain things, but they're quite limited in terms of their power. They don't have power to give any physical punishments. They don't have power to give lashes. They definitely don't have power to give capital punishments and put someone to death. So how does it work? And it hasn't been that way, you know, for almost 2,000 years. So how does it work? We believe that there's when a Beis Din cannot punish. So we believe in a just and merciful God that rewards the good and punishes the bad. We don't always see how it happens. It's not our business to understand how the debits and the credits work in this world and the next world and all of that. But we believe that there is some form of punishment. And so the right course of action for Avshalom was to allow for Amnon to be punished by Hashem. Not to become a vigilante, not to take matters into his own hands. But Avshalom, again, he is inspired by that sinna, by that hatred, and this is his command that he gives to his servants.
There's like parallels with David. David wanted to get rid of Bathsheba's husband, so he gave instructions that the husband should be killed. And here he's doing the same thing.
Right, David keeps his hand
himself.
David keeps. David keeps his hands clean, right, by giving commands, and Avshalom keeps his hand, right? So when the story plays out, and when David, maybe not in the initial, but when David has time to fully internalize everything that happens, you have to imagine something like that is like smacking him in the face, because he's There's also, I feel, similar to your thought, is that Uriah knows absolutely nothing about the punishment, the death sentence that's coming his way. Mm-hmm. He's totally out of it. And it's being like orchestrated by David, by Yoav, because obviously Yoav played a role. And kind of the one who is going to be, you know, I'm not saying from Shemayim punished, but the one who's going to receive the punishment doesn't know anything about it. Here, from Sefer Shmuel's perspective, in terms of David, David knows nothing. David is having everything being orchestrated that's going all around him, right? Avshalom is pulling all these strings, and David is just kind of in totally the unknown. So it's the exact, similar to what you were saying, David is he's being punished for his sin with Bathsheba in a way that is... He's now in the dark, and he's going to be left to, you know, to have other people make the decisions that in the end impacts him.
But you said it wasn't strictly told to us. Avshalom was waiting for David maybe to do something to Amnon, and he doesn't. It's 2 years later. Wouldn't you think he would have punished him already? So he had an opportunity to possibly do something.
Correct.
I mean, we don't know if he did pursue anything. You
correct.
Said it's not there.
Saying, why wasn't, how come there's no punishment
for that? Right. We're not sure, and this is something that comes up a number of times from here till the end. We're not sure when does the public become aware that the crown prince is actually Shlomo, who's basically everyone's least likely thought, right? He's the last thought that anyone would be thinking is that it would be Shlomo. I mean, granted, after we see how some of these sons behave, you know, we're all like, yeah, let's, you know, it can't go wrong with the 12-year-old. It can't be worse than the, you know, than the rapist and the murderer and the, you know, rebellions and, fill in the blank. So when is it public? And presumably the first famous story in Malachim chapter 1, when another one of David's sons leads a rebellion, it seems that it wasn't really so public. David knows, Bathsheba knows, the prophets know, but it could very well be that it wasn't so announced. And so I'm strengthening your point. All eyes up until the time of the rape, all eyes are on Amnon. He's the oldest son. So if he's the oldest son of David, you know, especially in that type of, in this, well, it's this, for the Jewish people, it's still new to have a king, and that after king number one, his son takes over. In the case of Shaul, it wasn't necessarily the oldest son that took over, it was the only surviving son, right? Ish-bosheth was the only surviving son, so he took over for that short amount of time. But we don't have but apparently in ancient society, it's quite normal that the oldest takes over. So up until the case of the rape, all eyes, I imagine, are on Amnon, which was one of the things that Tamar, in, when she was trying to convince Amnon not to do what he was about to do to rape her, basically said, it's going to be a stain on you. It's going to be a sin on you. It's not going to be good for your reputation, you know, highlighting the fact you're the crown prince right now. Kind of, again, she didn't say those words, but she might have been hinting to those words. So 2 years after, is Amnon still the crown prince? That's a question that we don't necessarily have an answer to, but maybe Avshalom is thinking, well, he seems to still be in that, so he seems to still be in that position. Like, my father has not, he hasn't, you know, maybe the punishment should just be a public declaration that Amnon, you are unfit to take over this kingdom, which, you know, and I'd have to imagine, and well, you know, the next one up, at least one of the next ones up would be Avshalom. And so there would be a thought, you know, maybe that would have been enough of a punishment. But there doesn't seem to be any, at least in the text. And maybe that is part of Avshalom's motivation. Again, it's not an excuse.
How many sons did David
have? We don't have a clear number.
And
he definitely has at least, at this point, we've seen at least seven names. There's one son of David is listed as, which is a testament to his mother, Abigail. The son, he had a son named Kilav, who was listed as one of the four people who never sinned. They lived their whole life without doing a sin, which on the one hand sounds like he should be a great candidate for becoming king, but he kind of, I don't think we don't really know much about him. And maybe that's why he never sinned. He kind of he stayed at it. He stayed out of trouble. But in terms of being fit to be king,
so he was the only other.
No, there. I mean, in the beginning of Perry, I don't want to speak poorly of. I think everyone's good until they step out of line. So far we have Amnon stepping out of line. Now we're going to have Avshalom, but his fifth son was Shephatiah. You know, until we know more about Shephatiah, we should presume that he was fine. Adoniah, until we get to the, you know, until proven otherwise, and unfortunately that's the son who rebelled. He leads the second rebellion in the beginning of Malachim, and there was a sixth son named Yisram. So we shouldn't speak poorly about any of the sons until they give us reason to.
But it could have made just David look bad if, like, all of a sudden he's declaring his oldest son unfit. Because, like you said, then it becomes like public. And,
correct.
And
correct.
The house
but right. So on the one hand you're balancing that, but on the other hand you're frustrating Avshalom,
right,
and we're about to see that.
Maybe David cares more about his reputation or his.
These are possibilities.
Were you saying that Avshalom's intentions were not purely to defend Tamar? He had some ulterior motives?
Meaning what your original point was that Avshalom might not only be acting out of defense of Tamar, mm-hmm. he might also be acting out of the fact that there's been a clear injustice that's not being dealt with.
Okay.
At all. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Meaning. Granted, it's much more personal to him because it's Tamar.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the fact that they would be the two most likely candidates to vie for the next being the next king, it's hard to say if that's not playing a role. But the psukim don't hint to that at all. Pasuk Chavtes, Vayasu Naarei Avshalom LaAmnon Kasher Tziva Avshalom. So the lads of Avshalom, they did to Amnon exactly what Avshalom had commanded, meaning they killed him. Vayokumu kol b'nei hamelech, all of the other sons of the king get up. Vayirkavu ish al pirdo vayanusu. Everyone got on their mule, their horse, and they fled. Meaning, you have to imagine that Amnon's not the only one who's inebriated. This party's going on. No one perhaps knows how to process, and the only thing that the screams that are going through this party is that Amnon's been killed. If Amnon's been killed, everyone, perhaps each prince is not thinking straight right now for many reasons. A, they could be under the influence of alcohol, and people don't think straight in such a condition. And B, they're processing, it's been two full years since the event, the horrific event with Tamar took place. If the only person that Avshalom was out to get was Amnon, why did he wait 2 years? Why didn't he kill him right away? Maybe Avshalom is trying, maybe this is some type of, he's trying to get rid of all the competition. Meaning maybe they're thinking that he's just trying to get rid of the other princes so that he'll be the only one who could take over. And they're all having to make this judgment call very, very quickly because there's not a lot of time. And so they start escaping.
Well, now, they don't know about the rape either, so they don't know why.
Well, presumably they do know.
Oh, presume, why?
Well, because we said David knows, and if David knows, presumably it got around the palace. Meaning Tamar was most, she was most nervous about the fact, right? It was, again, we found that in our, you know, current frame of mind, she was much more worried about the publication of the rape than the rape itself, because if no one knows about it, she can go on and she can, in that society, she can have a normal life. If everyone does know about it, she may never have a normal life.
Also, the rape happened. She can't undo it. So
correct.
Just how she could go. Live
correct, but she was even.
I mean, that's nowadays too. A lot of people.
She would even. She would even be well. She might. It implied that she maybe would have been even willing to stay with Amnon.
Right. We hear that, or you right. Would interpret it that
right.
Way.
Right. Uh-huh. Because
she's willing to, which is. Yes.
Is that the law in the Torah?
The law in the Torah is that if she's interested, he has to marry her.
But there's no law in the Torah that says
she has to marry him.
Right.
That's if she right. doesn't I'm want, if she doesn't want to, then it doesn't
it's
happen.
A different situation because of the relationship. It's not that he just raped a woman.
Correct. There's, you know, the stakes are high.
Well, no, sure. But if he was considered her sister, but if, halachically, then that would have been a solution.
And she,
correct.
Halachically, if she converted, then she's the sister.
She's not the sister halachically.
If she converted, then they could get married.
Siblings married, right? Didn't siblings marry each other?
No.
No. So the law, and we described it last time. The law is. On a biblical level, Minat Torah, when someone converts, since they're not related to anyone, they could marry their relatives.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Rabbinically, we say that that's prohibited. When that rabbinic edict came to being, I don't know.
But David was still the father.
David is the biological father of everyone involved. Correct.
So
but biology, biology. If there's a conversion, biology goes out the window.
So
we ignore biology. We put on our halachic glasses, and we look at the situation differently.
She converted, they are not related.
Correct. So
she didn't convert, and they are related.
Correct.
Okay, so explain that. Why, if she converted, everything the opposite. If she becomes Jewish, they're not related.
Because she became Jewish, that the act of becoming Jewish, a person could be 99 years old with 100 descendants, and if they decide to, on their 100th birthday, you know, instead of skydiving, they decide to convert to Judaism, they're not related to anyone.
Oh, not related to anyone, even the Jewish father.
Not related to anyone.
History, all their familial history
yeah.
is lost.
Right.
Okay.
It's like
anyway.
Wiped clean.
Like when your phone gets
Thank
wiped.
You.
Oh, please no.
So we have now every prince is running for his life,
mm-hmm.
and there's clearly you have to imagine that there's complete turmoil,
right.
And every prince we said had servants. Vayhi pasuk lamed vayhi hema baderech, so they were on the way, they were all on the way.
Where?
Probably coming back home, just escaping. Vashmua Baal David Lamor, and how does the rumor come to David? How does the news arrive to David? Now again, how is news arriving? Nobody's sending a telegram or a text. You know, one servant, right? And Hika Avshalom has called Bnei HaMelech. Avshalom has assassinated all of the princes. Below no sar mehem echad, no one survived.
Wow.
No one survived. Now, one could imagine how, meaning all you need is one servant to have heard that Avshalom is killing princes, because he did have one prince killed, and in the whole turmoil you have to horses are going everywhere, people are inebriated. The servants could also be, if it's a really good party, the servants will figure out how to drink too, and so this is how the news reaches David, and David's reaction in Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Vayakam HaMelech, the king gets up. Vayikra es begadav, he tears his clothing, right, the sign of mourning. Vayishkav arza, and he lies on the ground. V'chol avadav nitzavim kru'ei begadim, and all of his servants who are there with him stand over him, and they also tear their, with torn garments. Now David's reaction, I think is very telling, in that he's thinking to himself that this. He must be thinking to himself, this is all because of the Bathsheba episode. Because the Navi tells him the phrase, Va'ata lo tasur cherev mi beischa ad olam, and now the sword will not be removed from your household forever. And so, right? One would almost say the natural, I don't even know, we can't even use the word natural, but one reaction that David could have had is to get Avshalom, is to get an army together and at least capture Avshalom, at least, you know, but instead of acting out, he acts totally in. By Yikras Begad, if he tears his clothing, he might realize this is it. This is how bad the punishment is. And if this is how bad the punishment is, I have to accept it because I did the act. And even though I admitted to the act, that doesn't mean that, right? Just because I said chatasi, that doesn't mean that there's no punishment. The prophet told me that there's going to be punishment. I already saw one child die, that the baby that was born from Bathsheba and David's union died already. And so David tears his clothing. It almost seems like he's ready to accept this most horrific news. But immediately, Pasuk Lamed Beis, Vaya'an Yonadav ben Shema Achi David, Yonadav, who we heard about at the beginning of this parak, Yonadav, who was the friend of Amnon, who was the son of Shema, the brother of David. So David's nephew, he answered Vayomer, and he said, Al Yomar Adoni es kol hane'orim b'nei amelech himisu. Don't say that all of the lads, all of the sons of the kings have been killed. Ki Amnon levadomes. It was only Amnon that was killed. Ki al pi Avshalom haisa suma miyom anoso is tamar choso. Because it was by the word of Avshalom that there was the way to translate the word suma is that the what do you have for suma? So he's the order, the command. He's not saying that he's aware of an active command, right? Al pi Avshalom haisa suma. There was this potential command of Avshalom having a desire to carry this out towards Amnon miyom anoso as Tamar achoso, from the day that Tamar had been violated, from the day that she had been pained. So this is something that was in the air. Now, there's no, David never responds to this Yonadav saying, well, if you knew about this, why don't you step forward and you know, let me know about this before I sent Amnon to his death. You were supposed to be Amnon's friend. Mm-hmm. So it most likely is not that he did know about an active plan. But all Yonadav is doing, and we had said that the Pasuk had told us that he was wise, he's doing the math. He's doing the math that Amnon, after 2 years, fondly went to something at Avshalom's house. We all know, right? You know, Avshalom wouldn't talk to him for 2 years, so we all know that Avshalom hated Amnon. He probably killed him, and only him. That Avshalom is not a maniac. Avshalom is not someone who has something against all of the king's sons. Avshalom is, for these 2 years, it's been percolating, it's been boiling over, the fact that he wants to take revenge on behalf of his sister. Pasuk Lamed Gimel, Va'ata al yosem Adoni HaMelech Elibo Davar Lemor Kol Bnei HaMelech Mesu. The king should not place his heart on the fact that all of the princes have been killed. Ki Amnon Levado Mes. It's only Amnon. Which you may say, and again, I don't know for sure we could say that Yonadav is being insensitive, but it almost meaning it's definitely better that not all of the king's sons have been killed, but to present it in the way of saying, well, only one of your sons have been killed, that's crippling news in of itself, but he does seem to be successful in delivering this message and having this message be accepted. We don't hear David's reaction at all to this. Pasuk Lamed Daled, Vayivrach Avshalom. Avshalom fled. Avshalom realizes that he did something that you can't necessarily return from so easily. Vayisa hanar hatzofe einav. Right, the lad who was in charge of looking out lifted his eyes. He saw vayar vihine am rav holchem miderach acharav mitzad ahar. There was a whole group of people coming from the direction of the mountain. Pasuk lamed hey vayomer Yonadav el hamelech. So Yonadav spoke up again to the king. Hine bnei hamelech bo. Look, your other sons, they're on their way. Kidvar avdecha ken haya. Like your servant said, so too it was. Was when he, Yonadav, finished speaking. Behold, all the king's sons came. They raised their voices and they cried. And also the king and all of his servants cried. A great cry, because they all come back, but not Amnon. And they are all the other Bnei HaMelech, the other half-brothers of Amnon, are the eyewitnesses. Now, whether they actually saw the murder take place, but they know that it happened. They presumably saw Amnon's body. And so they're coming back and they're telling their father, and they're all crying together because one brother has killed another brother within the household of David. And while it wasn't everyone, it's extremely tragic, you know, times, you know, infinity, that such a thing could take place in David's household. And in the back of our minds, we have that phrase that Nasan Hanavi tells David, that the sword is not going to leave your home. That means death. Unfortunately, that was part of the punishment that coming towards David. Pasuk Lamed Zayin. Avshalom barach. Avshalom ran. Vayelech el Talmai Ben Amihud, Melech Geshur. He ran to Talmai, who is the king of Geshur. Why would he run to Talmai, who's the king of Geshur? Extra credit. That's the Zayda. He went to his grandfather. Right? We read in Perek Gimel that the Hashlishi Avshalom, David's third son was Avshalom, Ben Ma'acha, the son of a woman named Ma'acha, Bas Talmai Melech Geshur, the daughter. All right, that whole explanation of why this conversion is because Ma'acha, we had said, was an Eshes Yefas Tawar that David had captured in battle. She was the daughter of the king. She eventually converted. The whole debate is, when does she have the child that is Tamar? Is it after the conversion or before the conversion? But Talmai is Avshalom's biological grandfather. He's not Jewish. Well, that can happen. A person can have a Jewish grandparent and a non-Jewish grandparent.
So they're on good. They're David and Geshur.
I don't know.
Are they on good relations? We don't know.
That much we don't know. I mean, listen. My guess is initially not. I mean, if she actually was an Eishes Yefas Tohar, that's not done in peace.
Right.
That's done in battle.
Right.
But you know. But that's Avshalom is just a child. Avshalom is not. Mm-hmm. You can't hold him accountable.
Right.
For his father's actions, so he runs to Geshur, and he's going to stay in Geshur. So the fact that he gets to stay in Geshur, we have to imagine that he was accepted in peace. I'm not sure why this is. The pasuk does not. It shifts the subject of the sentence in the middle, right? Vavshalom barach vayelach al Talmai ben Amihud melech Geshur. That's a pause, right? There's an asnachta underneath the word geshur, the upside down wishbone. That's a semi-pause in the verse. Vayis abel al beno kol hayamim, and he mourned over his son for many days, which is understood as David mourning over Amnon. That Amnon is no longer alive. Avelos is something you do for someone who's no longer alive. Vayis abel al beno, he is mourning his son. It only makes sense to say that's talking about David's mourning over Amnon.
He couldn't be mourning over Avshalom, who, for all intents and purposes, is gone to him because he's.
So maybe this, maybe that's why. Maybe it's some type of, you know, hint to that there's also an avelos, an avelos on Avshalom, because David might be thinking that I can never accept Avshalom back. I mean, I can never accept Avshalom back.
Right, or like Avshalom might be feeling he can never go back.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So he's, you know what I'm saying? So he's planning on living the rest of his life in exile.
Right. It's the, yeah, it could be. And we keep, also, I don't know why we keep, right? Pasuk Lamed Dalet says, Vayivrach Avshalom. And then Pasuk Lamed Zayin says, Vavshalom Barach. And now again, Pasuk Lamed Ches, Vavshalom Barach, Vayelach Geshur. Avshalom ran away. He went to Geshur, kind of like the short version. Vayisham Shalosh Shanim. And he stayed there for 3 years. He stayed there for 3 years. Vatechal David Hamelech Latzeis El Avshalom. Vatechal is an interesting word. David HaMelech Latzeis El Avshalom was going out to Avshalom. Kinicham Al Amnon, for he had been consoled over Amnon Kimes, that Amnon passed away. Vatechal David, the Rashi and others point out that it's kind of only a part of a phrase. That the it should really be like Vatechal Nefesh David, that the soul of David was yearning for or pining for Avshalom. That after 3 years, Kinicham al Amnon, he kind of received some type of consolation over time about Amnon, and he was having some feelings towards some type of desire to reconcile with Avshalom. The Radak quotes from the Ibn Ezra, who somehow thinks that the word that's missing, instead of saying like Vatechal Nefesh, it was Vatechal Eshas David, that the wife of David was trying to convince him Latzeis El Avshalom, specifically Avshalom's mother. That over these 3 years, Avshalom's mother was trying to convince David to try to reconcile the relationship. And so when we continue next time with Perek Yud Dalet, it'll be about the potential to bring Avshalom back.
Do we meet up with Tamar?